Welcome to another installment of Queer Talk Radio. This is Carter Witt. I will be your guest interviewer for today. A few weeks ago, I had the opportunity to sit down and have a long chat with John Austin Bridges, and today I will be pulling out some excerpts of that conversation. So sit back and enjoy our chat. So welcome, Mr. Bridges.
Well, thank you, Mr. Witt.
So, John, it's wonderful to get to chat with you today. Let's touch on the first topic that we were going to play with, which was that your book got picked up to be used as a setup for a sitcom.
Yep, setup is probably accurate. I think that when CBS began publicizing that they were going to do this series based on How to Be a Gentleman and call it How to Be a Gentleman, I think the term they used was that it was going to be inspired by or something like that. I had never been able to understand exactly how anybody would make a TV series out of a book that was a guide for manners, but they figured out how to do something.
Let's define the book a little bit. It is How to Be a Gentleman, a timeless guide to timely manners. Do you have that?
I think that's what it's called right now. Yes. There have been two real versions of it, and I think that's what the current subtitle is. And it's part of a whole series of books of etiquette for men that Brian Curtis and I have worked on. How to Be a Gentleman is the first one, and I wrote that, but then Brian had the idea that we could turn this into a whole series, and so we've worked together on the other books in the series.
And these are timeless manners that I guess reflect a little bit of your background as you grew up in Montgomery, Alabama.
Well, actually, I grew up in Slapout, Alabama.
Slapout?
Slapout, yes. That's the little crossroads where I grew up. I was born in Montgomery, but I grew up completely out in the country, and that allowed me to be interested in things like etiquette and manners and parties and stuff, and to have a sense that there was a world beyond Slapout and a place where people had nice lives and did nice things, and I figured that maybe I could be part of that one day. And so I was always interested in that, and my parents encouraged me, allowed me to do that, and would actually give me etiquette books for Christmas.
Right. Say that I've been reading the second print of the first book here the last few weeks and looking through, and there's some updates to the modern world, discussions of email and voicemail, which many years ago we just couldn't imagine.
When we began these books, those things didn't even exist. There was some email, but not, and of course people had answering machines, but the books are once again being repackaged and will be coming out in even more updated editions by the end of this year. And in this one, I mean, we go into Facebooking and all of that sort of thing.
Wow.
Because you have to, because it's a part of people's lives.
And we're still trying to figure out how to use Facebook and what to share and what not to share.
and trying to figure out somehow to suggest that while these things are great things to have in our lives, they really are not necessities. They are conveniences, really. And trying to figure out how to use them in a way that is not offensive to other people, and where you're not really making an ass of yourself when you use them. Challenge, of course, is you can include information about what to do with Facebook. Well, in 6 months or something else post Facebook, because it just is tumbling forward. You try to keep up with it, and you try to help people realize that just because you have this technology, it doesn't mean that you get to abuse it. And that sometimes when you're using it, you are abusing it, and trying to be thoughtful about what you're doing and thinking about the other person who's around you or standing in line with you at the post office.
So, John, do you have any Gone Hollywood stories from the book being picked up? Was this produced in Los Angeles, or was it produced in New York?
It was produced in L.A., and no, I don't have any stories about that because I had to sign away all my involvement in it. So no, I did not get any trips to Hollywood or any trips to LA out of this. And that is generally the practice when a property is based upon an original, upon original material, that the writer of the original material has to sign away any involvement in it, because they don't want you hanging around the set trying to say, oh, well, this is what I'd do if I were you.
Right.
And maybe the series might have profited from my presence a little bit, but I signed that paper, and
right,
so that's the way that was.
Right. Well, to complete the topic, the show did get to air three times.
Right. There were three episodes that aired. The first episode we turned into a fundraiser for the Franklin Brooks Fund, and I figured, why not? Because anytime my name's out there, if I can raise money for something, I figured, why shouldn't I? And then there were two other episodes aired. There were others in the can, but the ratings apparently were not strong enough.
Didn't catch on with the viewing public.
It seems not to. It seems not to.
You mentioned that whenever you can raise money for something. And you have a very long history of a great deal of community involvement here, of the Franklin Brooks Fund being one that, as our listeners know, I enjoy stories about H. Franklin Brooks, and so I would love to. You are a very close friend with Mr. Brooks.
He and I were best friends for I can count probably about 17 years. He and I were each other's best friends.
As a character himself, he was quite a fixture at Vanderbilt and in the community.
He was. Franklin was a very well-known person around town. He was a very, very lovable person. And not only was he lovable, he was very loving of other people. He could figure out how to make conversations with people. I wouldn't even want to be in the room with them, but Franklin would have them in the corner and would find the interesting thing about them. And make conversation with them. And he taught French at Vanderbilt for 25 years. He was going to celebrate his 25th anniversary at Vanderbilt the summer that he died. And so he had been at Vanderbilt for 25 years teaching French, and had been very involved on the campus, was very loved on the campus, frequently voted as one of the favorite professors by the students. He was constantly being asked to sponsor various things. He sponsored the lacrosse team, of all things, and then he sponsored student publications, those kind of committees and things. But he became very involved in the late 80s with trying to convince Vanderbilt to include lesbians and gays in their anti-discrimination policy at the university. And so he, along with K.C. Potter, who was dean of students at that time, and Susan Wiltshire, who taught classics at that time at Vanderbilt, the three of them sort of took it upon themselves to lead the charge. And it was a remarkable thing, and it's hard to realize what a big deal that was back then.
So this wonderful force of personality, who after his death was then recognized by a local group, which then created the H. Franklin Brooks Fund.
Right.
Which is an interesting confluence, I believe, because there was actually this movement to sort of create what would become the Brooks Fund, and then he was sort of brought to the pinnacle of it later as it developed.
Right. Well, his name was put on it after he died. The fund was made possible by a grant from the Gill Foundation. They were doing grants around the country in sort of medium-sized communities to try to develop programs that would help build bridges between the lesbian and the gay community and the community at large. And Nashville was one of the cities that was selected for it. A guy named Phil Rush, who lived in Nashville at that time, had been in touch with them because he was in an organization that was involved with the Guild Foundation. And so he secured one of these grants for Nashville. And then he got involved. He took the idea to the Community Foundation here. And Ellen Lehman at the Community Foundation said, sure, why not? And it turns out that that was a much more controversial thing than any of us had a sense. There were people involved in the Community Foundation who didn't think that was an appropriate thing, to have a fund that was openly about the lesbian and gay community. And the Community Foundation deserves great respect and great gratitude for having persevered. And Ellen and the Community Foundation, I had wondered for a while why they kept featuring this fund so much. And I realize now one of the reasons they were featuring it was because some people thought it was a wrong thing. And they were willing to go out there and say, no, just get over it. This is a fund that we have, just like the Women's Fund, just like others. And it does good work. And so that was a bigger deal, I understand now in retrospect, than I understood it to be at that time. And so when this fund came to the Community Foundation, there was a small board that began with it. And at one of the meetings, they were going to have to name it something, and so they named it in Franklin's honor, in Franklin's memory. And so that's how it became the Brooks Fund.
John, you've also been involved with another, a few other sort of launching projects of the early days of the what is now Nashville Cares.
Well, yeah, I mean, I certainly was not a founder of Cares,
right.
And I always like to make that very clear. But I got involved in it in the mid '80s. And I guess shortly after it got officially founded, after it got chartered and such. And at that time, I was working at the Tennessean, writing at the Tennessean. And I sort of thought, well, I guess once again, it's one of those situations. I had contacts and I had opportunities that some other people didn't have. And so I called the folks at Cares and said, you know, I want to help somehow. And at that point, basically the only way that they were using volunteers then was to be buddies for people who were dying.
Right.
And I said, I'm not up for that. That's not a strength I've got in many ways in terms of strength. That was strength I didn't have. And so I said, but what I can do is maybe help raise some money and help bring some people into helping the organization. And so they asked me to be on the fundraising committee. And so the one of the things that I knew was I knew the folks at all the best art galleries in town, and so out of that grew Artrageous, because I called the folks at these galleries, and God bless them, they everyone said yes. I mean, there was no hesitation. I mean, nobody said, oh, let me think about it. You know, I'll have to get back to you. And so they all said yes, and so we began Artrageous. And it went on for 25 years. I mean, there are 24 of them. There was 1 year we didn't do it, but that's a complex thing. We did another event that year, but it went on for 25 years and was really remarkably successful and was good, certainly good for CARES, but I think it was good for the city at large. It certainly was good for the gay community, and for the involvement of the gay community with the city at large. And so I'm very proud of it.
Right, because it did bring in, for an evening, a lot of folks that didn't initially think about supporting any HIV or AIDS causes. And this kind of got their attention with the spectacle. And
well, it did. It was at the time when virtually everybody was being hit by the disease. Virtually everybody knew somebody who either was infected or had known someone who had died. And for good or ill, in a city like Nashville, a lot of the people who knew people who had died of AIDS or who were HIV positive were people who had some money, because they knew hairdressers and they knew decorators and they knew architects, and so they had friends, and these were people who were dear to them, and the response to it from the very beginning was really surprising. And people would say, well, I can't believe this could happen in a city like Nashville. Well, I guess maybe it could only happen in a city like Nashville. In certain ways, to me, it's interesting that for the first couple of years, it was very hard to get gay people to go to it because they were afraid because they knew there would be straight people there, and they were afraid to go because somebody was going to see them there and maybe know they were gay. And my response to that was, well, if they're there, they really probably don't care if you're gay. But after a couple of years, when it was so successful and word got around as to what a great party it was, then they started showing up. And after the first couple of years that we actually had a host committee, that was like the third and fourth times we did it, we started having a host committee. And gay people's names started showing up right along with the mayor and all those people in the same list. And then before too terribly long, and this was a big jump, I think, we began seeing the names of more women on the list.
Right.
And so it was a time when you had gay men and lesbians together on one list, which was kind of a step forward. Well, it was a step forward for the city. And then before too terribly long, you began seeing couples with their names on the same line. And that was, I think, sort of transformational.
And this year there's an anniversary event going on.
Right, it's the 25th anniversary of CARES this year, the official 25th anniversary of CARES. And so there's going to be an event celebrating that.
Right. And you're going to get to wear a new hat after this event, because you will be receiving the J. Thomas Powell Award for 2011 from Nashville CARES to recognize your contributions to volunteer activities on behalf of CARES.
Well, and that's a very lovely thing, if I may say. It's a very, very fine honor. Tommy Powell was one of the people who, if we could date back and maybe say somebody, he might have been one of the people who was a founder of CARES. Tommy probably was. He certainly was there from very early in the days of the fight against AIDS here. Tommy was there very, very early on. And he just was tireless. If there was anything related to AIDS or related to CARES, Tommy was there. He just logically was there. And he and his partner Lee Gannon were together for years, and Lee died shortly before he did. And but Tommy was just great, and so it's a wonderful thing that they have named this award in his memory, and it's really a very fine honor to receive it, because it's gone to really good people.
You care to pontificate or prophesy any things you see on Nashville's future, whether GLBT or even the city's progress?
The world around us has developed in lots of ways. It's certainly not perfect. Certainly not perfect. But it that I'm just really amazed when I watch younger people who just, you know, are totally comfortable. And I know that there are younger people who are not that comfortable. But the way that I see younger people who really, you know, they actually really date.
Right.
Which is a you didn't used to date. And, I mean, you would go out on a date, or you might take somebody home, or you would and then maybe develop a relationship with somebody. But the idea of going out and legitimately dating somebody for a period of time, that to me is a sort of remarkable phenomenon to watch happening.
Wow.
And because that's a real change in the way we're socialized now. And I hope maybe we treat each other with more respect than we used to treat each other. And so, but those are the kind of changes, some of the changes that I've witnessed, I guess, over the years. The acceptance of gay people in churches and other congregations, those kinds of things, that's a very interesting thing to watch. But once again, a lot of it has to do with the congregations being welcoming, but it also has to do with gay people being willing to be part of it too. And because they can't let you in unless you come through the door.
Right.
And so just all those things. That's the story that I've seen and that I see continuing to go on here, I believe. I hope.
Yes. Yes. You and me both. Well, thank you again for sitting down and talking today with me, John. Listeners, I have been interviewing John Austin Bridges here on Queer Talk Radio. Thank you, John, for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Carter. This has been fun.
Queer Talk Radio is a Joyce Arnold production, airing during DJ Ron's Out of the Closet. Archives of Queer Talk Radio can be found at queertalkradio.podomatic.com. This is Carter Witt, serving as your guest interviewer for today. Thank you for tuning in.